I'm standing outside the kind of record shop you'd find on any British high street. And I've come here because I've set myself a challenge to write some pop lyrics. Record shops seem so daunting to me now, because instead of the top 40, we seem to be faced with the top 40,000. There's just so much stuff on offer. And as a poet, a part of me always feels a little bit sad, because I wonder whether that very basic human need for the lyrical has been answered or catered for these days by popular music in all its forms, rather than by poetry. There's an old chestnut where John Keats gets compared to Bob Dylan, an impossible comparison, I think, because we've no idea how good Keats was on a mouth organ. But I got to wondering what would happen if a poet working now actually tried to write some viable pop lyrics for a singer or performer who's at large today. Is it doable? My favourite popular music lyricist would be somebody like Cole Porter. So the gander is chasing the goosey, the aphid is chasing the pea, Ravel is chasing Debussy, but nobody's chasing me, is my idea of pop lyric genius. So I wanted to go right outside my comfort zone by choosing somebody who works in a genre and an idiom that I have no particular knowledge of and I'm completely unfamiliar with. One of those would be hip-hop and rap. So I've come across the up-and-coming British rap artist Doc Brown and got hold of his album Another Way. I also don't want to go into this experiment alone, and so I've asked a colleague of mine, the poet Jo Shapcott, if she'd be up for holding my hand and having a go, although as yet she's got no idea that the artist she'll be writing lyrics for is singer, performer and pianist Jamie Cullum. So I'm going to go into the shop to buy one of Jamie's albums for Jo now, and then I'll take it over to her at the BBC and see what she thinks. I'm back from the record shop and I'm in the studio and I'm joined by Jo Shapcott. Hello, Jo.
Hi.
Who's looking at my... I really wish I had a big gold envelope to reveal the mystery artiste to you from, but instead it's a carrier bag. Anyway, so we'll put that there for a second. But first, I'm going to listen to a bit of Doc Brown. And this will be the first time I've heard a track by Doc Brown all the way through. So I'm going to listen to it and see whether I think this is going to be surmountable or not.
Stroll through this race of rats in slow-mo. Yo, roll up at 8 perhaps, it's so cold. Oh, on go the baseball cap for so low that you can't see the face, this man's an old pro. Swore I'd never take you back, I won't cope. How it ever came to that, I don't know. My dad fought for you, went through a war, it's true. My mother left from a Caribbean shore for who? And you promised us some gold-based streets.
That's strange listening to that. It's rhyme-tastic, as a good rap should be. And it's got lots of bite and attack, especially when it's Doc Brown is singing. But it's also very sweet and mellow and really kind of preoccupied with belonging and identity.
It's fascinating. And what strikes me is it gets straight to the heart of the strangeness of this mission, is how do you add to that? There's someone, you know, totally comfortable in that medium with this fantastic rhyme gift, you know. What are you going to put in there?
Shall I show you who you're going to be working with? I can't stand the tension any longer, so I'm sure you're dying to know.
Get that golden envelope.
That's right. So, I'd make a trumpet fanfare sound, but...
Okay. Heck! Wow! Jamie Cullum. That's fantastic. He can bend lyrics to do anything.
Let's have a listen to some Jamie Cullum, just to kind of compound it and see... See what you think, Joe.
After years of expensive education, a car full of books and anticipation, I'm an expert on Shakespeare, and that's a hell of a lot. But the world don't need scholars as much as I thought.
I'm already feeling a responsibility to find something that's going to interest this guy. So what am I going to write about?
It is a tall order. And it could be fun, it could be painful, or a strange admixture of both of those things. And hopefully we'll end up with two songs. Songs.
Fantastic.
And so, after much wailing and gnashing of teeth and extended deadlines, Jo and I did just manage to get our respective lyrics finished on time. They've been sent off to Jamie and Doc, and up until now we've heard absolutely nothing, and it's a mighty unnerving silence. So I'm going to make a sneaky call to Doc to see what he makes of my effort.
Hello?
Hi, is that Doc?
Yeah.
Hi, it's Paul Farley, Doc, the poet.
Oh, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. It's really nice to meet you, sort of meet you. Are you all right?
Yeah.
So you get presented with this doggerel by Mr. Farley, and it falls in your lap. Be as honest as you can. I'm a poet, Doc. I'm used to abuse. What were your first impressions?
I'd say my first impressions were... my very first impression was one of disappointment.
Right.
Not because of the quality of the poetry in the slightest, but because I was hoping for something that was so off the wall and so unrelated to anything within my experience that would be a real test to create something around it, you know? Whereas I felt like this was still a little bit within my comfort zone.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right. The one thing I was super anxious about when I was writing it was not to sound like you, because I was listening to your album on heavy rotation, you know. Okay. And all I ever did at the first few attempts was just me trying to ventriloquise an idea of you, and it all got really weird. Believe it or not, this is as far away as I got from that. Well, I'm up for serious TBH as far as this piece of work is concerned, and anything you want to change or anything that you would immediately have a sense of adjusting.
I'll tell you the first thing, the beginning of the second verse, where it says it's hard to resist, all the clocks going back and the planet's attack of winter, who has you and me on its Z-list.
Hmm.
You could work at that, but it's so clunky in terms of how things trip off the tongue when you're rapping. I think probably the best way to describe it is to show you a bit that actually does flow beautifully. In the last section, it says the girl at the cash point, Friday night flashpoint and no return, nothing to smoke but the ash point. That line there, when I read it straight away, it sounded like something that I would flow myself in a song, you know.
Right, okay. We've got another week to work on this, or rather you have, and I'm really dying to see what you do with it, so I'll see you in the studio in 7 days time, and we'll see what's happening.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
See you later.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Oh no, failed again. What's really interesting about Doc's reaction there, though, is that I seem to have written a Doc Brown lyric, even though that's the one thing I was determined not to do. But I feel good about what Doc said, too, because he seemed able to see some potential in what I presented him with. And so I look forward to our grand finale in a few days' time with a sadly familiar mixed feeling of excitement and dread. Time is up for this particular lyrical challenge, which means that all four elements of the experiment have gathered together in a studio at BBC Broadcasting House. And in a moment, we'll discover just what all this joy and pain amounts to. So I'd like to welcome Jamie Cullum, Doc Brown and Joe Shapcott. And I'd like to ask the three of you to sum up the experience thus far in three words, starting with you, Joe.
Fear. Trembling, excitement, and curiosity, because we've been kept apart from our esteemed composer.
That's so, four, but I'll let you off.
Sorry, curiosity.
Jamie, three words.
Unknown. I would also say a sense of feeling, I don't know whether in fear is the right word, but doing something from someone who's so great and so amazing with words, and bloody scared.
Doc, how did you find it? Three words.
First is anticipation, definitely. Then a little disappointment. And then satisfaction.
Sounds good to me.
Sounds like my love life.
Well, personally speaking, I found the whole thing exciting and terrifying in equal measure. And I think that's mainly because I'd usually send a poem out into the world the way I made it. And I've only myself to blame for that if it all goes wrong. Nobody else is counting on me. So the name of the game here is collaboration, and I'm determined to keep a lid on the poetry puritan in me and look forward to the fruits of our little adventure. First, though, I'd like to say a proper hello to Mr. Jamie Cullum, and also I'd like to introduce you to your poet, because this is the first time you've actually met the lovely Joe Shapcott.
Hi, Joe.
Hello.
Being as honest as you possibly can with Joe sitting right next to you, can you tell me what your very first impressions upon receiving the lyrics?
Well, I've been on tour last 10-12 days, so I got them while I was on a minibus just somewhere outside of Leeds with a horrendous hangover, and I got my BlackBerry out and had a look at these lyrics. and I was immediately struck by the intriguing nature of the language. It was clearly about something quite specific, but it was also, there was this subtle kind of layer which I didn't quite understand, which is, I guess, what I think great poetry should be. So first of all, I just took the lyrics as they were. I mean, actually, Joe structured it in verse, chorus, verse, chorus, verse, chorus, like a song. So I kept it as it was there. Only when I got a really workable idea did I change one line quite a lot, because rhythmically I couldn't make it work.
Right, which line was that?
Well, there's a line that goes, the last sparrow, the last oak, the last polar bear, the last spring.
Right.
It's a really beautiful line, but...
So it works on the page, but you're thinking of it in terms of being a workable lyric, and why didn't it work?
Yeah. I mean, if I'd have been writing more in the idiom of musical theatre, or maybe more naturally experimental music, it would have been fine, but the lyrics lent themselves to a kind of really intelligent pop song, I thought. So I treated it as thus, and I just changed that line and made it a bit more economical. I just put the last polar bear, the last spring, which I think communicates... Right. Mm. Quite a similar thing, and flows with the music that I wrote.
It's interesting that Jamie changed that one, because I realised as I was writing it that I had stuffed an awful lot of different things in the line, though I liked them all and was too lazy to think about it, I guess. So I think you've spot on, done exactly the right thing.
Well, I thought in a fight between a polar bear and a sparrow, the polar bear would win,
yeah.
So there it was.
Jamie, when you write your own lyrics, how does it normally work for you?
I tend to find, sitting behind the piano, all the answers are there, really. If I come up with something at the piano, a melody, words seem to sing through the melody, even if they're kind of unintelligible or they're very basic words. Something will come through that melody, and you tend to base the song around that theme. Very rarely do I say, oh, I'm going to write something about the Polish uprising or something like that, and then go off and write a song about it. I tend to come up with something on the piano, and the words come through that. And I don't know how that happens, but thank God it does.
Thanks, Jamie. We'll come back to you in a bit to hear the song you've composed with Joe's lyrics. But first, let's go over to Doc Brown. Hi, Doc. Good
how
to
you doing?
Meet you. You've also brought this gentleman with you.
This is Mikis Michaelides. He's the MD of my whole new album. He's like the musical director, you know, and a lot of the ideas have stemmed from his keys, you know. He's a keyboard player first and foremost, but he's a man of many instruments.
Now, Doc, the last time we spoke, I know you've been expecting more of a challenge, but since then, how have you and Mikis been getting on with the lyric?
The biggest challenge for us was getting the mood together, you know. There was a grey kind of Monday morning in the winter feel to it, you know. And so we were trying to convey that in as entertaining a way as possible.
Mikis, how did you feel about it?
I was definitely thinking about what I was going to put into the music to reflect what was in the words. And the fact that it was the English hit, I was thinking oboes and things like that and instruments that would kind of convey that. But at the same time, you know, Doc Brown's a rapper first and foremost, and I wanted it to be quite credible. Mm-hmm. So it was making sure that it had a strong beat. And also that we was going to play it live meant that I didn't want too many instruments in the backing track.
No.
So I left no bass in there or anything like that, so it would stand up with two performers.
What was your way into these lyrics? What did you begin with? Was there a line or a particular phrase that you were able to kind of clone the rest of the melody from?
And there was loads of little things in there that were all just so distinctly British for me to jump onto. But for me, there's something about the last verse that talks about all the different types of days you have in your average English week. And it just felt like such a crescendo that in my mind, everything had to build up to there so that the end would be like a volcano erupting from a lyrical perspective. And lyrics take on a new kind of intensity with rap, with good quality rap, because a real rapper will have that ability where they can create intensity not just from what they're saying, but the intricate delivery, the rhyme patterns, you know. It could start off sparse, then the next thing you know, it's like a train, one carriage after the other, just flying along the track, you know, and then it could go back to being sparse again, and playing with your voice like it's a drum or a percussive instrument. That's the thing that makes it that little bit special and different from, like, performance, poetry or singing.
Okay, I think it's time to hear the song. So, gentlemen, if you'd assume your positions, and I'm quite frightened. This is Doc Brown with The English Hit. We'll be right back.
that spill their loads on landfills in towns still built round simple thrills. Let them tempt you, give the underbelly a tickle. Taste switch so quick, call us picky and fickle, but the experience is cinematic. Cameo in the director's edit, hoping that I might just make the credits. Or am I just another name, like another drop of rain in the drain? See this blood in my veins, it's a second generational immigrant strain. No blacks, no Irish, and no ball games, but things change. My relationship is love, hate, just wait. As much as you inspire, you frustrate. Come on. My English rose left me for dead, one in the heart, one in the head. But I suppose I should've known from the start, one in the head and one in the heart alike. My English rose left me for dead, one in the heart and one in the head. But I suppose I should've known from the start, one in the head and one in the heart alike. They say it's harmless, but for the benefit of six farmers, the clocks go back and we are trapped in the darkness. A season of mist descends, never ends. Days feel like cul-de-sacs and dead ends. Now I'm back on the booze again, too dependent. Maybe lately, who's my friend? I've got 200 names saved in my phone book. Oh look, there's no people I really want to speak to. Have I gone bad? When's my last piece of eye contact? I just text, email and the rest. Wi-Fi, why hide behind the sci-fi? Online, I suppose, no north-south divide. No skin colour lines, no love at first sight. Wish spring would come by and bring the sunshine. Watching better lives advertised, televised like the truth, as if it's no word of a lie. My English rose left me for dead, one in the heart and one in the head. But I suppose I should've known from the start, one in the head and one in the heart. My English rose left me for dead, one in the heart and one in the head. But I suppose I should've known from the start. Full of your grey Mondays, half-closed Sundays, quiet when you come days, kids club fun days, where your church best days, like your day of rest days, cold fronts, moving in from the west days, dog days, pea soup, muggy smog and fog days, odd days, I don't wanna go into my job days, more days, fake your own death cause you're bored days, all days come and go, always, the girl at the cash point, Friday night flashpoint, the no return, nothing to smoke but the ash point, fat joints, cream teas, matches on the big screen, close my eyes, said it. You seem like a big dream. My English rose. My English rose. My English rose left me for dead, one in the heart and one in the head. But I suppose I should've known from the start, one in the head and one in the heart. My English rose. My English rose. My English rose. One in the head and one in the heart.
Woo! Yeah. Woo! Cheers.
Thank you.
I'm
brilliant.
Speechless. Make the most of it. It doesn't happen often. I don't know what to say. You made it sweeter but more hardcore at the same time. It went more to either extreme, and you packed it full of more information as well.
I definitely added more words. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. For me, I couldn't hit that crescendo that I wanted to reach, that I think you can reach on the page. When I counted it out, I needed a little more than 8 bars in each verse to be able to get the point across. And obviously, the only point I wanted to get across was the one I felt that you were making.
Joe, Jamie, yeah,
I thought it was brilliant, because I'd seen what Paul had written, and that choice of putting the word rose in, the English rose, which I don't think you did, Paul.
No.
I thought it was genius.
Yeah.
Because it's sweet and difficult at the same time. I thought it was lovely.
Something about what Paul had in the chorus. I mean, the chorus is pretty much word for word how Paul had it, but Paul had England, you know?
Yeah.
You left me for dead. And as nice as that seemed on the page, it didn't pack enough of an emotional punch somehow. And I thought, like, more like a kind of jilted lover type of vibe.
Jamie, you were sort of shaking away there.
I started looking at the written word while Doc was doing it. And I looked away in the end because I wanted to just hear it as a piece, like I was listening to it in a club or on CD or something.
Right.
And it sounds like someone who listens to rap music who wrote the lyrics, to me. But that's probably because of the way you're delivering them and what you added to it. I don't know. It was fascinating to hear it. And it's so different putting together a song from this perspective as well, because what Doc's got to do with these words is make them really rhythmical.
Yeah, yeah.
And what I did something quite different, but that must have been more of a challenge to really hit the marks of the rap, because it's so... I mean, that's what you have to do with that music, you know?
Okay, now it's over to Joe and Jamie. So, chaps, if you'd assume your positions in the studio.
Okay. The premise is you have to imagine we're in the future in a time of global warming and there's no snow anymore. And the singer is remembering the very last snow that there ever was. And in that last snow, he makes love with his lover. And it's the memory of that.
Knew it was coming before it arrived, the way we shiver with our own energy. Your hair smelled of ice, your lips tasted of frost. It was the last snow that we'd ever see. Today we're busy counting the last things, the last polar bear, the last spring. Do you remember the last snow cold on your tongue and cold enough to glow? Stars, just the dark, extra dark, and the cold air pressing all over. We peeled off our clothes, ran outside a circle of light, diving into the snow and each other. Today we're busy counting the last things, the last polar bear, the last spring. Do you remember the last snow cold on your tongue and cold enough to glow? Snowflakes for ice, ice drops for hair. In these days, we still had four seasons. We wanted to melt ourselves in the snow, freezing and melting, freezing and melting, freezing and melting, freezing and melting. Today we're busy counting the last things, the last polar bear, the last spring. Do you remember the last snow cold on your tongue and cold enough to glow? Under our feet, we've got our own hurricane season. The sun's burned the heather right off the hills, and the sky is hot and hissing. And we're busy counting the last things, the last polar bear, the last spring. Do you remember the last snow cold on your tongue and cold enough to go? And cold enough to go.
Salute, maestro.
Wow.
I've got to talk straight to you, Joe. I was watching your face while Jimmy was playing that, and it was this kind of weird mixture of pride, wonder, or... can you just give us an immediate response?
It's absolutely beautiful. Everything about it is very... It's very emotional. You really brought out the emotion in it. It's incredibly emotional. And I loved everything. I loved the little melancholy piano tune that surrounds it. I don't know where that came from, but that's so beautiful.
It really came from the lyric. That was the first thing that came.
Yeah.
And if I'd have recorded it, I would have had that melody going behind what I was actually singing.
Yeah.
But I thought that gave a kind of... It was kind of melancholy, because I wanted the chorus to be really... strangely joyous, because I got the idea that these two are doing it, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, but at the same time, it's a very melancholy thing, so I wanted that kind of Kurt Vile, happy but sad kind of thing.
Yeah, no, it's very, wonderful.
Love the movement in the piano, it's really good. And built as well, and then came back down, fantastic.
Yeah, and it built in a way that the lyrics didn't necessarily build. I mean, I think you had to make that out of what I'd done.
Something that Doc said about the chorus is... One thing you always do when you're kind of writing a pop song is you make sure your verse rhythm and your chorus rhythm is completely different. So that was the kind of thing that was challenging, to make the chorus itself like feel like a chorus as opposed to just another verse with different chords. And also, I probably wouldn't have put quite so many choruses in, actually, because it came quite... I may have doubled the length of the verse. But I think as it was, It felt like a story, and I liked the way it worked in the end. That's what I first thought, but then once I'd written it, I thought, actually, it really does work.
So, guys, is this doable? Can poets work with musicians? Is it kind of a viable enterprise, do you think?
I think what I've really got from this is just the freedom with metaphors. Sometimes when I'm writing, I tend to write quite straightforward lyrics. I mean, I love interesting images, but some of the more abstract images in this really... And I sung them, and I thought, actually, that, you know, maybe I should start doing this in my own stuff, you know, because I love reading abstract images. I just sometimes shy away from singing them and putting them in my music, and I think it definitely works, and I've loved doing it. I really loved it.
Sometimes you use the same words over and over without noticing, and sometimes you can get stuck in a rut of using the same words. And that's definitely one advantage that I think you gave me, you know, just using words that I might not normally put on the page.
Well, I want to do it all again. I'd recommend any poet should have a go at working with a musician, because the two forms have got so much to offer each other. I think many poets might lament the fact that the big lyrical form in our time is to be found in the popular song, but none of us should bury our heads in the sand or turn our backs on song. It's good to be hung up on tunes. And who knows, you might even get to put your foot on the monitor, or at least gain an access all areas pass to the green room of song.